Welcome. If you have a cell phone, please remember to turn it on vibrate. If you've not been with us before and you'd like to testify today, there are sign-up sheets over there on the table, so you'll need to sign up. And let us know if you're more than 50 miles away, or I think it's 100 miles. 100 miles. So if you're farther than Eugene, I think that would be Roseburg would be 100 miles, wouldn't it, Senator Cruz?
Roseburg is roughly 147 miles.
Oh, so somewhere between Eugene and Roseburg, or north. Rice Hill, where you could get ice cream. Okay, well, now that we've...
That's some dairy ice cream, and you can actually buy that statewide now. So.
Okay, well, now we've dispensed with all the goofiness. we'd like to start with a write down our list today, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 38. And, Madam Administrative Assistant, would you please give us the update on Senate Bill 38?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 38, as drafted, creates the Task Force on the K-12 Fiscal Reform and directs the superintendent to contract with a consultant to facilitate that task force work. And it also creates the Joint Legislative Education Fiscal Reform Interim Committee. However, you do have the Dash 1 amendment that was proposed by Senator Morse, and he is here to speak to that amendment. And it modifies the printed bill significantly. So I'll let him elaborate on those details.
Well, that's great. And Senator Morse, I'll let you know there isn't a soul signed up, testified in opposition in your bill. So you're batting 1,000. So come on up. Introduce yourself for us. For the record, we know who you are.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, Frank Morse, State Senator from Albany, representing District 8. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. To give you a little bit of background on this effort, we convened several focus groups of the stakeholders during the interim period to look at this whole issue of fiscal reform in K-12. And the original concept that arose out of that was the creation of a task force last week, as a matter of fact. In further review, it came to our attention that this might be a very logical task for the Quality Education Commission to undertake. And so we met last Thursday with Legislative Council, with various members of the education community, and drafted the amendments as you have them today. I have some prepared remarks, and if you'll indulge with me, I'd like to at least go through those and share them with you. As we look at the governor's budget of $5 billion, is it going to be 5.1, 5.2, 5.3? Who knows what that budget is going to be? But the conclusion, I think, almost unanimously amongst all of us, is that whatever that number is, it's going to be inadequate. It will not be sufficient to meet the needs of educating our children. And we also realize that voters have made it clear that additional funding will not be forthcoming through taxes. There's also a perception by voters, and this really becomes the focus of Senate Bill 38, is that when there is less revenue available for schools, the cuts focus disproportionately on those activities that are directed to the classroom. And looking at the history of K-12, when you adjust for inflation, we've actually had a decrease in funding over the past 10 years in excess of 8%. So this issue is one that continues to just stay with us, the underfunding and the disinvestment in education, particularly in K-12. But these underfunding issues have really been transferred right directly to the classroom. And what I have here in the bold type is an attempt to put a face on this issue in my district. And I don't intend to make West Albany High School a poster child. And I don't intend to leave the impression that West Albany High School is not delivering a good education, because I think they're making the best of what they have. But I'd like to put a specific face on it, and I would guess that within your districts, the districts you represent, this same face would appear, or very similar. For example, over the last 3 years at West Albany High School, there was a 20% reduction in teachers and a 25% reduction in administrators. And this reduction was happening at the same time enrollment was increasing. 72 course offerings were eliminated. Nearly one half of the teachers exceeded the student-teacher accreditation standard of 180 students per teacher. Business classes were reduced by 75%. AP art was eliminated, and all art was reduced by 33%. And drafting classes were eliminated. SIM reading remediation was reduced by 84%. Home economics was reduced by 33%, and AP calculus, which, as you all know, calculus is really the foundation for success in any of the technical engineering programs. But AP calculus was reduced by 50%. And the crisis born of these reductions was magnified by a 20% increase in enrollment in all academic core classes. The result of these reductions is played out in the number of students with a complete eight-period schedule. For example, 95% of our freshmen had full schedules, 77% of sophomores, 38% of juniors, and less than half of our seniors at West Albany had a full schedule. My superintendent, Pat Bedore, is present today, and I believe that she may have some comments that she could share with you and answer questions. And I certainly applaud her and all school administrators and teachers for the work that they're doing in the face of such adversity. While there exists a true financial exigency in our schools, there also exists an opportunity to do things that we wouldn't normally do when times are good, and that's to look within the system and focus on those things that address really the fiscal nature of how we do things. And the question is, how do we reform the system to provide greater resources to the classroom? And that's a fundamental issue. If we have finite resources, which we certainly do, and they're not likely to expand greatly in the future, looking at what we have, how do we redirect those resources to the classroom, to the point of service, to students, in ways that we're presently not doing? And that really is the focus of Senate Bill 38. Senate Bill 38, as amended, creates a process, and I would tell you, I would hope, that it respects no sacred cows. That all of the elements within this broad system of K through 12 will be evaluated, and recommendations would be forthcoming on how we can improve the system from the input side, the fiscal side. The bill, as amended, redirects the Quality Education Commission from its current mission of determining quality education models and their attending costs to analyzing the current funding mechanisms of K through 12, including studying the entire system, which is districts, ESDs, Department of Education, identifying all barriers within the system that diminish resources available to the classroom, identifying statutes and rules that create barriers to providing additional resources to the classroom, identifying changes that could be made in school districts and education service districts that would result in economics of scale, including administrative functions that could be reasonably consolidated. The bill also requires the QEC to make recommendations for providing additional resources in the classroom, to make recommendations for gaining additional resources from the elimination of barriers or the amendment or repeal of statutes or rules, and for directing or redirecting those additional resources towards, very specifically, A, reducing class sizes, increasing the number of classroom teachers, C, making available additional classroom support materials, and D, increasing the number of courses offered to students. The Commission is also directed to study classroom support services and recommend the level of support services that most effectively meets student achievement goals as established by law. Now, the Commission has, in the bill, will have a relationship with a joint interim Legislative Fiscal Reform Committee to be appointed. And that committee will be in a position of somewhat of oversight and review and determining the scope of the work required of the commission and the resources necessary for that work. The bill also anticipates, and I believe this is an important component, is that outside consultants will be retained that are really objective in their perspective in looking at the system to facilitate how do we really manage fiscal reform and what can we do. The Department of Education is required to consult with the interim committee regarding the kinds of consultants and the scope of work of the consultants. And the commission shall report periodically to the interim committee as requested and submit a final report containing its analysis no later than October 1st of 2006. Now, the funding for these consultants is an issue that I believe that we have a reasonable approach. Number one, the governor's balanced budget has a recommended allocation for the Quality Education Commission. We have the opportunity in the bill to receive, solicit and receive grants. And then also there's an amendment which provides the transfer, a one-time transfer of the school technology account. And I would remind you that that account is one that accumulates as a result of QWEST's deficiencies in breaks in service. And for those fines and assessments, they've gone into that account. The threshold for distribution out of that account is quite high. Presently, there's about $150,000 in that account. It does not meet the threshold or even come close for distribution. So I believe that's a logical place for those funds to be used to retain consultants in this activity. The interim committee, legislative committee, it's an important linkage in this process, and it's one that the QEC has not enjoyed in the past as a formal linkage back to the legislature. I would conclude by suggesting that past efforts to improve education have really been focused on outcomes, and the QEC has focused on what are the costs required to deliver certain levels of outcome. This fundamentally redirects that mission of the QEC, and that's to look internally at the input side, the fiscal reform side, and what can we do better to redirect resources to greater good in classroom instruction. How do we reform the system to provide greater resources to classroom education? That's the question. And I would suggest that fiscal reform is timely and it's necessary. And with that, Madam Chair and colleagues, I would request an affirmative from this committee, and hopefully we can advance this to the floor of the Senate.
Thank you, Senator Morse. I have a couple of questions for you going through your amendments. I just want to make sure we've got them pretty clear. On page 1 of the bill, we're deleting line 18 through 28. Page 2, we are deleting the entire page 2. And then on page 3, we're deleting lines 1 through 11 and deleting lines 31 through 34 and inserting a bunch of other stuff.
Yes. You're pretty close.
Okay. All right. So now that I've got that clear, I just need to ask you, this bill, I was wondering where the joint interim committee is. So we're going to create that committee out of this bill. You didn't
yes.
delete that part. Okay. And then the second part is I need you to give me a little more information about the school technology account. I believe that came through Senate Bill 622 or something like that a few sessions back before you were here. And I remember what that was all about. But give me a little more information, if you would, about that threshold and the amount of money in it and how you plan on accessing it.
Madam Chair, colleagues, 1999, Senate Bill 622 was passed, and it formed the school technology account, which created to accommodate funds to support technology and video conferencing in public schools. The funds in their entirety were dispersed through the account according to law. The account, however, stayed in existence as a receptacle for monies deposited pursuant to a performance assurance plan implemented by a telecommunications carrier in connection with an application for regulatory relief. So it kind of breaks in service monies, fines, and assessments for going into the account. The monies in the fund must be used to provide access to advanced telecommunications technology in elementary and high schools. Madam Chair and members of the committee, the fund level, as I recall, this issue came before us in our joint interim committee on management and information technology when we were reviewing this account. And there are those in the audience, I'm sure, that can address this more specifically, but it seemed like the threshold for distribution was like $1 million. When the fund reached that, it was a pretty high threshold. Then it was distributed across the state on, I believe, a per-student basis, as I recall the discussion. The $150,000 in the account today, obviously, if you distributed that on a per-student basis, it's pretty de minimis. Not pretty de minimis, it's almost... Very small. Yeah.
Very de minimis.
Yeah, very de minimis. So I believe that would be certainly in keeping with the intent to focus on education, albeit in a little different way, but to assist in the retainage of consultants, the professionals that can help move this whole process of what we've coined the fiscal reform focus within the entire system of K-12.
So that money, if I understand correctly, then was all spent once it was in there, and then it added more money from fines and assessments.
Madam Chair, I believe that fund is continuing to actually accumulate. I don't know at what rate,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a static fund.
Right, but Senator, it was used for the purpose it was designed for.
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And I'm very impressed that I remembered it was Senate Bill 612.
That is amazing.
And that's very good. That happens a lot when you have really controversial bills. That was a very controversial bill in 1999. Okay. Well, that's my question for the moment. Senator Morissette has a question for you.
I see former Speaker Lundquist sitting in the audience, and he was instrumental in putting together this quality education model. Have you consulted with the commission, I mean?
Yes, with the Quality Education Commission?
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, I would like to extend credit to Susan Massey, who is the co-chair of the commission or designated chair. When reviewing this concept with her, her suggestion was that this would be a likely task to be assigned to the commission because they have the structure, they're in place, and they certainly have the database and the passion, I think, to address this issue. And so that's where we had last Thursday, we had a meeting with legislative council and drafted amendments.
Did anyone else have a question? Senator Decker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Morris, the only, I guess, and it's not really a question, it's just you have no opposition that's going to testify, so I'll be the opposition or the token opposition. The only concern that I have is that I was a part of, and I'm trying to remember if you were part of the Oregon Business Council group that was initially going to look at higher education but morphed into and spent. They had, I think, $400,000 and hired Eco Northwest and a number of consultants to examine this very question. And we now have a report, and it looked at all areas of K-12 and how do we find efficiencies from the formula and distance-based education to special education to employee compensation and benefits. And now, I mean, we have this ream of report that was just produced 4 or 5 months ago. Now it's a question of implementation and political realities of the Oregon legislature in terms of implementation. And so I guess the only doubt that I have of a really good idea and a very ingenious plan is, in some ways, do we have that data available to us And then I would just have to be convinced that the commission is, would be a better implementer, because they're not, even any baggage that OPC might have or the legislators that were involved, that the commission might not have that baggage. They'd be able to come in and really help us implement some of the findings. And I think they'd find many of the same things that this Oregon Business Council Task Force found and their consultants found.
Madam Chair, Senator, my hope is that this would be an extremely thoughtful process, one that has the time to really get into these issues and look at it system-wide. One of the things that I've noticed in when we arrive here, you know, we grab bits and pieces as legislators and we get our gun out and we start shooting rifle shots at issues that we think would be helpful to change. Within this very broad and institutionalized over a long period of time system, I think it's deserving of a more thoughtful review system-wide. And that would be one of my hopes that that would happen. So it's something, you know, we all would like to find the fixes now for education because of the financial exigencies under which it operates. But I think it is going to be a longer process to achieve some substantive changes.
And Madam Chair, and you don't believe we have the data that we need this to accumulate and gather and all the data in one place of, and you don't think we have it available to us now, and this would be the vehicle to achieve that?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator, I think that there's a huge body of data. Is how do you formulate change? Mm-hmm. I had a great question posed to me this last weekend, and that was, what's the closest thing to eternal life on Earth? A government program. How do you change things? But, you know, how do you move fundamental change in systems that have been embedded for a long, long time? It was very difficult. The other issue I just might offer is, you know, when you reflect on Measure 5, we had an entirely different governance structure within K through 12. Not different, but we had one in 1990 as of March 6 when that measure passed. That same structure exists today, but yet we have an entirely different funding model, and with it, by attrition, a changing governance model. Well, what should be the governance model? How should we manage K through 12 education in this state? I don't think that we've stood back from that issue and said, you know, let's take a thoughtful look at it.
May I?
Sure.
Well, I think one of the eternal things, in addition to something once established, is all of the studies that it takes to make a change. Now, we've had testimony a couple of days ago about scholarships, need scholarships, and I was on a commission that studied that 2 years ago, and there was a lot of reference to past studies that were never looked at. We're once again initiating an in-depth study of ESDs. Well, there have been umpteen studies of ESDs. There have been a number of studies on changes. Now, I hope that you are taking a look back and picking, you know, not reinventing something that's already been done several times, and it sounds like you're doing the right thing here. But I can't tell you how much I admire former Speaker Lundquist for spending a year going around the state putting all of this stuff together and being responsible for this model that we have currently, and I hope that this is not another study that is going to be dropped down the well, never to be seen again.
Madam Chair, Senator Marcet, I agree 100%. But I think we got to try.
Oh, I agree.
We got to try.
I think you're doing the right thing.
Thank you.
Senator Morris, I need to alert you to something.
I thought some of this sounded all familiar. And Senate Bill 364 is up for hearing today, and it's a task force. Now, I'm not big on task forces, even though I think I introduced one myself this session, but that's why originally I didn't really want to schedule your bill, and then I was glad to hear you had changed it. But, you know, task forces have merit, and I think we need to take a look at it. But Senate Bill 364 is a task force to examine career and technical education in grades 7 through 12. And this comes from basically the Senate Bill 622, which was supposed to put technology in the classroom, and this studies how come it's not happening and what we can do to better that. That task force wants money from the general fund, and they want $150,000. It seems to me there's a nexus between the money that you want for your bill to complete your work. There's a nexus to Senate Bill 364. So I just wanted to put you on notice that that bill's up for hearing today, and we're going to have that discussion, and there may be a little dance about who gets what money, but I just want to let you know about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you. Senator Morris, why are we stopping at 12?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, I believe that this task is probably so gargantuan, just in its own way, that to expand that into the community colleges and the Oregon University system might just swamp the boat.
All right, Madam Chair, and the reason I ask, Senator, is, you know, we've had testimony in the last couple committees about the blending of the systems, and you know, so I would think that at least, if, I mean, I'm not saying you need to restructure higher ed. You're right, that would be a task, but you know, at some point there has to be reference and being mindful if students are going to be bouncing back and forth and credits are going to be bouncing back and forth, there needs to be some attention paid to accountabilities, funding, that sort of thing, in that nexus too. So
mm-hmm. I would agree.
Just the thoughts.
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Great. No further questions. Thank you, Senator Morse. I think I'll ask some other folks to come up.
Thank you very much.
And appreciate your time. We have, I had my administrator look over at the sign-up sheet for Senate Bill 364. We have 10 people signed up for that bill. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people signed up for this bill. So we're going to try to keep it pretty timely. I think we're probably going to have to go till about 4 o'clock on this bill. Okay, so the lucky more than 100 miles away from home person is Susan Massey. So, Susan, if you want to come forward. And, Lynn, you're sitting next to Susan. Did you want to come up at the same time? We'll get a panel going. And, Susan, I know that you come from Coos Bay.
I do.
I'm a Reedsport grad.
Ah.
So, welcome to our committee, you coasty you.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for us, please.
I am Susan Massey. I live in Coos Bay, and it's been my pleasure over the years to do a lot of work with school boards. I served on the State Board of Education for 10 years, and now I am the chair by default of the Quality Education Commission until further work is done on that. And I want you to know how pleased I am to be here to be talking about Senate Bill 38. And I was contacted by Senator Morse and his staff about this, and was delighted to see the ways that these two efforts might interface. His goal in this bill is the most effective use of the education dollar, I think, to sum up. And the goal of the QEC is the application of that dollar to a goal of exceptional student achievement. And I do want you to know that the commission has recently put out the report that looks like this, we would have liked to have had color, but we were being thrifty.
And we appreciate that, Ms. Massey.
You can see it's not really thick, but it does tell a lot about the work that we've been doing over the past few years. And if any of you would like copies, I would be happy to facilitate your getting them. In our last go-round of work, we had an accountability panel, and it began exploring the needs of the system to be more effective and outlined several strategies, including the development of a more efficient data gathering system. And I would submit to you that our data gathering effort alone is costing us way more money than it needs to. This is also an element of Senator Morse's bill. The study of governance issues, which he mentioned, is also one of their proposals for change. And as we do study governance, I think that that brings in issues that Senator Cruz raised about how the systems do blend together more effectively. These are just a couple of the points that seem to fit together so nicely, and I would heartily endorse Senator Morse's recommendation that the Quality Education Commission take on this work. The work seems to dovetail so nicely together, and we would appreciate the direct relationship with the Joint Interim Legislative Committee on School Fiscal Reform. It has also been my pleasure to work with Lynn Lundquist, which we sort of call the father of the commission, and so I have enjoyed being here with him today.
Thank you, Ms. Massey. Speaker Lundquist.
Madam Chair, Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association.
Speaker of the House, please put that on the
And I say father of this, I don't think I'm old enough to be father. But I'm going to try to keep my remarks fairly succinct into how this maybe fits into the whole picture of the QEC, because I think that's really important. A couple months ago, or about that time, I actually talked to Pat Burke, who's in the audience, and as you may know, I've never served officially on the commission, but I've always participated in it. And I was talking with Pat about the idea that I think the commission needs to become more relevant from the standpoint of we need to go back and look at maybe the basic structure of what we call the prototype schools. There have been changes over time, and if you just analyze the history of what in elementary grades, how they really are doing quite well in reaching the standards, and I'm wondering if our resources that we have in our model actually portray what's happened out on the field. And I was sort of complaining to him a little bit. I think we need to go back and do that. And then he mentioned later on about Senator Morris's bill, and that's sort of how this got started. But I see this actually fitting together quite nicely, because the work that Senator Morris is planning for this, for the commission to grab a hold of and really come out with some results, that should be incorporated into the QEC, into QEM. In other words, because as we find efficiencies in the system, that should reduce the number. And that's been my concern over time, that the QEM, we've increased it with inflation and other things that have happened over time, but we really haven't gone back and looked at the basic structure for a while. And I think it's time that we do that, and so I really think this sort of completes the circle, if you will. Whatever this commission would do on this particular project, then as that's incorporated in, that will develop a new number, and I hope it's a lower number than we've seen before because of that. I would also like to address Senator Deckert's comments about the work that OBC is doing, and I know about it, and I've been briefed on it more than once, but I don't want to portray that I know everything about that. However, I do know, for example, they looked at transportation and said there's a big issue there. They looked at special ed. But what they have not done, and as I see the task of this, we need to look into special ed. Where are the, where the savings might be, or in the structure of that process? The same with transportation. So I see this as a more detailed analysis of that, if you will, in order to come to the end result of how we do get more money into the classroom, as Senator Morris is talking about. So I see it as a circle. The other efficiency is that since there is already a body that's been working on this, I think rather than start a new task force or something, you have some history here that I believe the QEC Commission would be useful in that. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Does the committee have any questions? Senator Decker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, Lynn, my only hope is, and I do buy that, I appreciate that the hope has been that y'all will come, because OBC didn't, to their credit, they gathered a lot of information, but they didn't come and say, do X. I mean, if you're committed to driving dollars in the classroom, do X, do Y, and Senator Morris talked about no sacred cows. And that would be my only, is that then there is no sacred cows, and it comes back in a couple years of do this, do that, do this. The chalkboard project kind of promised that, and maybe that's coming too, but I think that would be helpful and give us up or down decisions to make.
Madam Chair, Senator Decker, if we don't do that, we're not going to accomplish our goal. It's just that simple. And I think some of you realize or know that actually Oregon Business Association, that's part of why I'm sort of proud of the fact that we try to make things happen. And I want that same process to be involved here.
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Lundquist, because I've been thinking for a long while that we aren't giving any hope to people out there. We're not giving hope to teachers or parents, educators. All of us who care about education, it's like I've said it before, we come here with our 10 cup every session, and we basically get what we had before and don't make really much progress, and people get tired of it. I think their children grow up and become adults before they're ever going to see anything change. And, you know, it's my hope that with this joint interim committee, with the new focus, that we can come up with a 10-year plan to say, okay, in 07, we're going to get to this point in funding education and doing the things that we need to do in 09, 011. I mean, we got to get there. Because if you don't have hope, you don't have anything. So give us just a little. That's all I ask.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morris said.
Thank you. I really like your plan. During the interim, Senator Starr and I, as co-chairs of the interim education committee, called all the stakeholders together and talked about how we could improve the system. You know, let's not talk about getting rid of SIM or CAM, but if you have to make changes, let's do the efficiencies and so on. It was a one-day meeting, and we talked about it, and ideas were generated, but again, we ended there. Other things were going on to continue that discussion, but I do think that the model has been established and that you have worked around the edges, and I think by implementation of efficiencies inside the system it's a great idea. We're working together on this because you have established the model, and that's what it's for, so I'm very supportive.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate your long distance to travel, Ms. Massey, and your service on the Quality Education Commission. Okay, I'm going to hear from Pat Bedore next, and then after that we'll bring up a panel of agency people and lobbyists and so forth. So we've got about 15 minutes, so Ms. Bedore, if you could give us a couple of minutes about your great high school.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Pat Bedore. I'm superintendent of schools in the Greater Albany Public School District. And I'm here to support Senate Bill 38. We've been looking at the impact of deteriorating funding over the last 4 years, and I think Senator Morse did an excellent job of putting a face on it with West Albany High School. We also have South Albany High School with a similar face. We have middle school students who have no elective choices anymore because our resources have to be devoted to core academics. A particularly painful action that our school board had to take last year was to reduce the number of credits required for high school graduation. Our school board had a very high standard set at 26 credits. That's 4 credits above the state minimum. But what we found is that we couldn't offer enough classes for students to gain that many credits, and we were in a position of creating conditions where students were not going to be able to graduate through no fault of their own, without failing any classes, just not being able to take them. So we look for efficiencies locally, and I feel comfortable saying that every superintendent in the state is looking in their district for efficiencies. And we get lots of opinions about that from our local communities about how we could be more efficient. At a point last year when I realized that looking for adequate funding was not going to be as effective as looking for programs that were adequate to fit the funding that we had, I invited some superintendents to join me in a radical superintendents club, if you will, where we would meet on a regular basis and talk about the activities in our school districts that were creating more efficiencies or creating innovations. And I want to say at this point that the Department of Education was very supportive and participated in that group every time it met. The limits with a group like that is that it was small, and what innovations worked in Little Oregon were not necessarily the same kind of innovations or efficiencies that would work in Albany, Oregon. Senate Bill 38 is the hope, Madam Chairman, that you just mentioned. It's the hope that through this study by the Quality Education Commission, not only efficiencies can be identified at a state level, but also the innovations that are working in school districts across the state, because it's those innovative programs that are creating more and more efficiencies, the kind of collaborations that really pull communities together. I'm thrilled that the Quality Education Commission has been included and a task force excluded from the proposed bill, and also the linkage from the work of that commission back to an interim legislative committee, which means that this will come back automatically to the next legislature. In the past, committees and task forces that have been empaneled have only delivered reports. So I see this as a powerful link to the next legislature where the next step can happen and implementation. I think this makes a lot more sense than Secretary of State Bill Bradbury's proposed Senate Bill 168, which would create state performance audits of school districts. I believe that is redundant and inefficient. So I'd just like to end my comments at that point, and I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Well, Ms. Fedor, you got a freebie on that one. So I'll let that one slide.
I'm sorry.
My notes.
Amateur here.
But thank you very much for testifying. Does anyone have any questions? I know Senator Starr probably shuddered a little bit when you talked about having to reduce the number of credits down to the state standard, because he doesn't believe the state standard is good enough, and frankly, I don't either. So we are impressed that your school district went far above the state standard and stuck with it for quite some time.
And Madam Chairman, we would put it back for our students because we think it's the right thing to do if we could offer enough classes.
You're right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, on that note, we're going to bring up the Department of Ed, Pat Burke and Vicki Fleming, and then after that, I'll bring up Lori Wimmer Whalen and John Marshall, and then we'll be done with this bill.
Senator Walker, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Fleming, Deputy Superintendent at the Oregon Department of Education. I'll be very brief in my remarks. We are very happy to support Senate Bill 38. In fact, as you've probably heard the superintendent testify before you on numerous occasions, we believe that accountability is job one at the department and have instituted our organizational structure around being able to deliver more effective and more efficient services in a variety of ways, and have taken the management of the state school fund and the work with 198 districts and 20 ESDs very seriously, a commitment to quality data and transparency in the way that we are working. And I think I just want to mention and reinforce what has been said earlier about an enterprise approach to the way that we're thinking about our work. To Senator Cruz's point about why stop at grade 12? The policy work of the State Board of Education has been about looking at P16. How is it that high schools, community colleges, universities work together? How is it that we begin to think of pre-kindergarten and preschool opportunities as part of our education continuum? The finance modeling and the way that we finance that system can either present barriers or can assist us in being able to accommodate that full continuum for all kids, and that's really what we're all after. And I would just end by saying that the example you brought up of the kids' proposal, the integrated data system, I think is a representative sampling of how we could be more efficient in this education enterprise. We have multiple data centers that exist around the state that are not necessarily compatible or interoperable. We have duplicative ways of managing those data centers and the technology infrastructure that exists to make that work. And we're going after that set of issues very aggressively and hope for your support in that proposal. It is definitely a way that money can be saved in the system. And to your need for a better accountability, you need good quality and information that's valid. And without a data system that works well, we can't provide that for you. So I would just, again, end by saying that I appreciate Senator Walker's remarks about the fact that we need the courage to actually act on these recommendations. And I think the ESD work group is a good example of our need to stop talking about it and do it. And we are ready and willing to pull the trigger on any policy that you suggest to us that would be a better way of having the system work. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fleming. I want to thank you publicly for serving on the ESD work group. That's not going to be an easy task, and I appreciate your time. Mr. Burke.
Senator Walker, members of the committee, I too want to speak in favor of Senate Bill 38 as amended and express my appreciation to Senator Morse for his leadership and vision in putting this together. The commission, my association with the Quality Education Commission actually goes back to Governor Kitzhaber's first Governor's Committee on School Finance that led to the creation of the Legislative Council that Speaker Lundquist led so admirably. So I've got some history here, and I think what Senator Morse has done is really highlight what had been a problem with the QEC from the very beginning. Let me briefly describe. There are about 16 states in the United States that use some type of approach like this. Oregon, from very early on, took the approach that's called the professional judgment model. That is, you gather people together who are familiar with education, you identify components of a high-quality system, and then you begin to identify what do those components cost and use that information to generate a model. There is another model, which I believe Senator Morse's bill creates, which is to actually go deep within the components of the existing state system and to ask hard questions about what those components cost and set priorities within those components and identify those for funding. That is a new charge to the commission, and I think a welcome one. It helps refocus the work of the commission and provides it some direction. However, because of that long history that the commission has, it already has some very powerful tools with which to do this work, such as the database initiative, which allows us to ask very deep questions, detailed questions about the cost of various components of education in the state. Secondly, from the very beginning, when the commission was first established in ORS 327-506, it's established as a biennial commission, which means that every other year the commission becomes disconnected from the legislature. So every other year when the commission is ready to issue its report, it goes through a process of reconnecting to the legislature. Senate Bill 38 creates the Joint Interim Committee on School Finance Fiscal Reform, which will overcome this barrier and keep the work of the Commission connected to the legislature during the interim. As Senator Deckert mentioned, the Echo Northwest work is out, and the work of OBC, fortunately, the commission already has Duncan Wise, the director of OBC, as a member, and Representative Lundquist as a member, former Representative Lundquist as a proposed member representing OBA. That's the caliber of individual that sits on the commission, and the commission would benefit not only from that Echo Northwest work, but the other perspectives that are currently brought to the commission. Finally, as you've heard this afternoon, particularly from Susan Massey, the commission is already deeply engaged in conversation about accountability and governance. One of the commissioned papers last during the interim session and the work of the commission dealt specifically with governance. So we've embraced that work and have begun working on it. And also the question of system integration and better connection to the high schools and community colleges, that work was addressed in the best practices panel on the commission. Not by any means to suggest that the work is done, but only to say that the commission is already looking at some of the implications that would be covered in this new task. So really appreciate, again, Senator Morris's idea here. I think the QEC is already set up with governor's support. Members are appointed by the governor. And, Madam Chair, it does still have, at least in the proposed budget, a small amount remaining of financial support. We were in a position of having to cut that pretty dramatically for the governor's proposed balanced budget, but currently there's about $75,000 that would be assigned to what currently are three different committees, or about $25,000 per committee. If we can sustain that throughout the session, there would at least be some beginning financial support for this work.
That begs a question from me. What if the QEC gets whacked in the budget, just to put it bluntly?
If the QEC is totally eliminated, we would be severely limited. What we've already done is eliminate the clerical support. Two sessions or 2 years ago, there was actually a full-time manager, an outside contract contractor. That was eliminated 2 years ago. We had half-time clerical support in the last session. That support has now been eliminated, and we had retained some money to hire outside consultants. If that money is also gone, then about the best we could do is continue to meet using existing staff to schedule meetings, collect minutes, distribute information. The money for even the printing of the document was paid for out of the allocation this year. We would try to find a way to probably use the web or other ways to print or distribute the documents. So we would be basically down to just meeting management unless there were some additional resources available.
All right. Well, I think I'll have a greater discussion about that in my Ways and Means Committee. So thank you both. I need to move along and hear from Lori Wimmer Whalen and John Marshall. And you're in support, so I don't think you have a lot to say except go fight team win. Right?
Right. Madam Chair, for the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen, representing the Oregon Education Association, its 43,000 members. I'd like to start by saying that we support the amended bill, and I'd like to thank Senator Morris for his thoughtful leadership on the issue of maximizing school funding and looking for ways to get the biggest bang for our buck. We appreciate the way he's been involving stakeholders since the interim, and we've come to several meetings here in the Capitol before the session even began to discuss the ways this might evolve. And he's been very receptive to hearing from all of us on what our thoughts are on the issue, and we are very grateful for that. During the last interim,
I also served on the Quality Education Model Cost Panel this last go-round, and I really have come to appreciate not only is the QEM a nationally lauded model, judging from the conferences I've attended on school finance and how you best determine how to get quality out of your school system and how much that costs and what the different things are, but I point out that that's an investment this legislature and its predecessors have made. It's a tool that is available to all of you as you ask various questions, not just the big question, you know, how much would it cost to fully fund everything and bring all 90% of students to the standard. You can plug in all kinds of assumptions and use that tool in a number of ways, and so we're very happy to see the amendments to this bill so that the commission can continue its work with respect to everything you've already heard, and that, with that I'll end my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Marshall representing the Oregon School Boards Association. Everything that Lori said, plus to Senator Deckert's concern that the many task forces result in nice, pretty reports that end up on a shelf. And I've been involved in a number of interim task forces that have looked at a variety of education issues over the years, and some have, in fact, produced those nice reports that end up on a shelf. However, I would point out that the last interim study that was done on ESDs resulted in their numbers being reduced by a third from 29 down to 21, and a new equalization formula created. A couple sessions ago, a couple task forces were appointed to look at special education and how we fund it, as well as small schools and how we can provide additional resources to help small school districts, particularly those operating small high schools. And both of those reports resulted in two components being added to the state school fund distribution formula. So I think it is possible for interim work to actually produce something out of the legislative arena. And certainly Senator Deckert's right. I think oftentimes we come up with fine policy, but then those policies run straight on into the politics of the legislative session. So I would hope that whatever work this group produces, that it will produce specific recommendations to bring to the legislature, so then you can act accordingly on those recommendations. But I think that's extremely important.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. And your point's well taken. The task forces can produce good work that doesn't just sit on a shelf. I was on an independent contractor task force that met 10 times during the interim, and I think we are actually going to resolve the issue of independent contractors this session once and for all, which is just absolutely amazing. So we can do good work, and I trust that they will be doing that.
Now, I think the key, Madam Chair, is involving the stakeholders, and certainly Senator Morse has done that when he began work on this idea last fall. And the Quality Education Commission has also been excellent in terms of bringing all the stakeholders together so there's some ownership in their final product, and that's obviously the key, so that whatever recommendations are brought here next time, there may be some with which not all of us disagree, but at least there will be some ownership and some rationale to why we may disagree.
I think so, too. All right. Thank you both for coming. I appreciate it. I'm going to close the public hearing on, what bill were we talking about? Senate Bill 38. Colleagues, I'm going to hold on to that just for a little bit until we hear 364 and resolve any funding concerns that we might have. But I get the sense everyone's on board with it, so we won't hold it very long. I'm going to quickly open a hearing that will only take about 5 to 10 minutes, and then we'll get into 364. So I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 193. And Lori Mackinnon and Marcia Keith, if you could come up, please. And yes, while you're doing that, please, Marjorie, tell us what this bill is all about.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 193 exempts people who are licensed by the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board who have graduated from certain veterinary colleges or veterinary departments of universities or colleges from regulation by the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. As you'll probably hear from the Vet Medical Examining Board, this has to do with off-fees schools and their regulation.
Okay.
And, by the way, we received written testimony from Alan Contreras, who is the administrator of the Office of Degree Authorization. He is not able to attend the meeting today. However, that's what this bill is exempting them from. And he has provided written testimony.
And that is at our desk here.
That should be at your desk.
And is he supporting the bill?
He says we have no objection to Senate Bill 193 as introduced.
All right. Thank you. Okay, ladies, take it away.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of committee. For the record, I'm Laurie Machinen, Director of the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. And we're here today because there is a conflict in statutes. ODA statute allows them to make determination on validity of degrees. Our statute allows us to make an approved list of veterinary schools. The Veterinary Board has been doing this since 1914. With success. In 2003, we learned that the Office of Degree Authorization, or ODA, had made a decision that degrees from St. Kitts and Nevis are illegal for use in Oregon. The problem there is that Ross University is located on St. Kitts, but it is a U.S. school with U.S. instructors, and every state in the Union licenses graduates from Ross University and has been doing so since 1991, and a couple of states don't even require equivalency examinations for graduates of Ross University. We do require that all foreign grads go through a very rigorous equivalency program that includes science and clinical and language equivalency determinations before they then go to the next step, which is the National Veterinary Licensing Exam, which is a very difficult exam. And the two members of our board who have, one member took the exam and another one took the test exam online, and we don't think they did very well on the test. So, at any rate, what I'm saying is it's a very difficult test, and if people who pass it are entitled to licensure. In addition to that, our grads pass the jurisprudence exam, and we recently implemented a regional disease test that people also have to pass before they get licensed. So we feel that the board is more than qualified to make determinations as to what veterinary schools produce grads that we will license. I didn't do a fiscal impact on this other than a rough estimate of licensing revenue that we would lose if we were not allowed to award licenses to Ross grads. But the bigger impact, I think, would be the possibility of a lawsuit or several lawsuits against the state by Ross grads who applied and were licensed in good faith, as well as the economic impact on them and their families and the communities where they provide veterinary services. That's it for me. Happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Ms. Keith, did you have anything?
Yeah. Yes, I'd like to add something. My name is Marcia Keith, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, and we're here to support our examining board's Senate Bill 193. The bill clarifies an important point. It clarifies that it is the Veterinary Medical Examining Board that is the best qualified entity to determine who should be practicing veterinary medicine in the state of Oregon. In prior correspondence, even the Office of Degree Authorization acknowledged that professional evaluations of an individual's degree is in the province of licensing boards. But we understand that the ODA has questioned the validity of degrees from various colleges on St. Kitts, but for all intents and purposes, the veterinary degree from Ross University on St. Kitts is an exception to the ODA's concerns. All veterinarians from non-accredited schools, non-USA accredited schools, must be certified by the Educational Commission for Foreign Veterinary Graduates. That's a group that was created by the American Veterinary Medical Association Council on Education that works hand-in-hand with the United States Department of Education and is the accrediting authority for colleges of veterinary medicine. Coordination between the council and the ECVG, okay, that's at least worth a buck and a half. The Educational Commission for Foreign Veterinary Graduates ensure that the standards for foreign educated veterans are comparable to the veterinarians that are educated in the American Veterinary Medical Association accredited veterinary institutions. So it's important that the state of Oregon recognize and uphold our examining board's authority to approve who practices veterinary medicine in our state. By doing so, we would also validate and not penalize the dedication and hard work of those veterinarians who graduate from non-USA accredited institutions and who successfully meet our accredited standards. Thank you.
Thank you. It sounds like there are significant sideboards here to ensure that these students are well educated and they have to pass these very lengthy exams, and you should be, and I, from what I understand, there's only two states in the nation who issue veterinary licenses to graduates of Ross University who don't issue licenses.
Madam Chair and members, actually there, the two states refers to New York and Ohio, and they accept Ross graduates. They don't put them through the equivalency programs.
Oh.
Those boards have apparently decided that the Ross program is similar enough to accredited U.S. schools.
Okay, that's what you were testifying about. So then 48 other states accept it with taking the equivalency exam. Well, it's pretty rough duty. So I say if anybody can get through that, they ought to get their degree and be able to practice. Any questions on behalf of the committee? Okay, well, thank you both very much for testifying. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 193. And colleagues, I think this bill ought to move. And I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 193. Senator Starr, have you got a comment?
I move Senate Bill 193, the floor of the due pass recommendation.
All right, thank you. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 193 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? We have a quorum here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just barely.
All right, we have a quorum. No objection. Bill's approved. So we will send that to the floor. And who would like to carry that? Senator Starr, good for you. Thank you for volunteering. Okay, see, that was quick. We did a good deed there. All right, we are going to move forward. I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 364. We should have a senator or a representative in the room.
Dwayne Bales.
Okay, Senator Schrader, I don't see you. I have my glasses on. There you are. You're in black today. And then Dwayne Bales, Mr. Bales from Representative Scott's office.
How many Senator Schrader bills are we allowed to do in one day?
You know, he might be getting close to his limit, but we'll see.
Just an education kind of guy.
That's right. I bet you like that last bill, too.
Yes, ma'am. I thought you made an excellent, well-informed decision on that bill.
All right. We're all about dogs and cats and taking care of animals.
Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. Senator Schrader, introduce yourself, please.
Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Senator Kurt Schrader from Senate District 20, Canby, Oregon City, Gladstone, and North Clackamas area. Here before you to testify in favor of Senate Bill 364. As a bill that's co-sponsored by myself and Representative Scott. This is a fairly simple bill. There's going to be some good testimony, I think, by a lot of others who have a lot more history with career and professional technical education than I have. But it's a fairly simple bill. Established a task force to evaluate the role of career and professional technical education in middle and high schools, and its articulation with the higher education community, particularly community colleges, in the workforce development arena. This bill recognizes what we have all seen, given our children and grandchildren, that a lot of our young children who go on to college do not graduate from college. Indeed, college is beyond the grasp of many young Oregonians, given the costs and tuitions that we've seen in recent years. The SIM and the CAM in particular, I think one of the main goals behind those programs was to provide a channel should students want to make career choices. Not forcing them, but allowing them to have the opportunity between career and college track choices. This task force helps get us on the road to implementing, I think, some very thoughtful opportunities for young America. Vocational education, as you all know, is rapidly disappearing. in our K-12 system. That system, as you've heard from previous testimony here today, and I'm sure before, is slowly enduring its death by a thousand cuts. And I guess I'd ask this committee, there's several questions that you may want to consider. One, is it appropriate that vocational technical education go by the wayside in Oregon? What's the cost-benefit of career and technical education in our middle through high schools in our state? How many statewide articulation agreements currently exist between our 225 high schools and the 17 community colleges that we have? And how can high schools work smarter with the business community, our community colleges, and our higher education community, part of what I would consider the whole more, better, faster mantra that this administration, I like to think this 73rd Legislative Assembly, is trying to adopt. There have been some bills in past sessions along these lines. Senate Bill 272, I believe it is, from last session, Senate Bill 85 from this session. I would respectfully argue those are not the same thing as we're talking about here. They're great bills. They expand loan and grant authority from the community college workforce development programs to create innovative public and private partnerships, and that's great. But they do not deal with the role of our middle and high schools in our state and how they apply in terms of developing a 21st century workforce, one that is not always going to college but indeed has a role in our state. Senate Bill 364 has several strengths. I believe it addresses the introductory career exploration in grades 7 and 8. It provides accountability by reviewing and reporting results and recommendations of our high school, community college, higher education 2+2 programs. It builds on existing investments in distance education. Most of you, I think, here remember Senate Bill 622, where we put all the lines into all the high schools trying to build that interconnectability. It also examines and recommends innovative and cost-effective funding models for articulated career technical education programs in grades 7 through 16. And it reviews and reports and makes recommendations regarding the status of career technical education, teacher education programs in Oregon, as well as identifying best practices. Just a quick example, in 2002, the New England Association of Schools and Colleges did a study of 1,200 freshmen, and it showed that 60% of the students in work-based learning activity, participating in work-based learning activity in high school, and 64% of those that participated in two such programs in high school earned a GPA of 3.0 and above out of a 4-point, compared with 30% of the rest of that cohort, the rest of the people in high school. So that's, I think, a pretty telling comment about how valuable these types of programs are. Same study also found that these youngsters are more likely to participate in programs like tech prep, apprenticeship, and job shadowing. I'm open to amendments. I have one myself. I've worked out with Representative Scott's office. Mr. Bells may discuss a little bit. It's fairly minor, and we'll submit them for the committee. On page 1 of the bill, line 7, after the word governor, it inserts the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House as appointing members, and then goes down to line 30 on page 1, deletes A, basically, and puts in reviewing available funding sources to determine the amount of monies that should be appropriate to adequately fund the career professional technical education in grades 7 through 12, a topic of discussion that we need to have this session. I'll open to other friendly amendments, frankly. Look forward to committee's discussion. As you can see, it enjoys bipartisan, bicameral support already. So hopefully have an opportunity to deal with this in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Decker and I were talking earlier, actually, on Senator Morris's bill, because he had mentioned also 622 and the agreement that was reached. And we couldn't remember if, I mean, we're looking at the amount of money left in the fund, and we were wondering if the T1 project was completed. I don't know if you know that or not.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the T1 project was completed. The problem is the school districts having trouble maintaining the lines, having the financial resources to use those lines now to access the very information we hoped to give them when we started the project.
So that would be another infrastructure funding issue to be dealt with.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Mr. Bales.
Good afternoon, Chair Walker and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dwayne Bales, and I'm the Legislative Director of the House Majority Office. And I'm appearing before you today on behalf of the majority leader, Representative Wayne Scott. And Representative Scott was hoping to be able to attend the meeting himself, but unfortunately, because of some scheduling conflicts, he was prevented from doing that. So he asked me to appear on his behalf. There's a couple of brief comments I want to make about the bill. First, the representative is very pleased to be a co-chief sponsor with Senator Schrader. Second, he strongly supports this legislation and would urge you to vote in favor of it. Now, having said that, we do have, as the Senator mentioned, an amendment that makes some relatively small changes. He touched on the first with adding the Senate President and the Speaker of the House to the group of officials that would appoint the members of the task force. And we believe this is important because it gives the legislature a say in who will actually serve on this important task force, and we thought that was important. The second change does require that the members review available funding sources to determine the amount of money that should be appropriated to adequately fund the career and professional technical education. And basically what this does is it expands the focus of the task force, and it doesn't merely focus on or center on the quality education model, it just expands that. And Representative Scott does urge the committee to adopt this amendment and pass Senate Bill 364 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we appreciate your consideration of the bill, and thank you for your time letting me testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Bells. We appreciate it. Committee, do you have any questions? Yes. Senator Starr.
Does this bill, in fact, go to the floor, or does it go to Ways and Means?
It would go, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it would go to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
I don't know if we'll get out, but I'll try and prevail upon the committee down there to get a
put the squeeze
hearing.
On us down there. Senator Schrader, you never put the squeeze on anyone because you are very thoughtful, actually, about representing your constituents in this process. And I want to thank you for this bill. I think it is very thoughtful. And we have a number of students here to testify, and I really want to hear from them today. So I'm going to have a conversation with you later if I need to. And let these great kids testify.
Great.
And thank you, Mr. Bell.
Great. Thank you.
Thank Representative Scott for signing on.
Thank you.
We do have a number of students here, and they need to leave by 5 o'clock, and we have someone here who came from more than 100 miles. But I do want to give Mr. Dexter an opportunity to talk about this bill, because he can provide us a little history. And, sir, I'm going to give you about 6 minutes, and then we're going to hear from all these great students who came today.
Chairman Walker, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 364. For the record, my name is Ron Dexter. I'm Director of Career and Technical Education at Concordia University in Portland, the former director at the Sabin Skills Center, and retired Associate Superintendent of Professional Technical Education at the Oregon Department of Education. Today you will hear teachers and students testifying in support of this bill. They will explain how important these programs are and how this educational experience has shaped their lives and their plans for the future. I think, and I'm so pleased to see the students here today that I think I will give you the Reader's Digest version of my testimony. I do have written copies for you, but...
We can take those written copies from you, Mr. Dexter, and we'll all be able to read that at our leisure. And if you could give us Reader's Digest version, that would be great.
Great.
And we'll hear from
I'd just like to say that the reason I brought this bill forward is because current technical education is struggling, especially at the high school level. I received an email yesterday from a superintendent with 4,000 high school students in his district, and he said, and I quote, "We have severely cut our CTE programs in our school district, but I anticipate growing stronger, more vibrant programs in the future." That's pretty typical of what's happening current technical education programs, and you'll hear today from students in FFA, agriculture, health services, information technology, and other areas. I'm not sure of all the areas that they're representing today, but there's 22 different current technical areas. The words current technical really are synonymous with vocational or professional technical. Oregon uses the term professional technical. Nationally, current technical is used. So those words are used interchangeably. PSPC uses professional technical. One of the things I'm hoping the committee would do is change the name to current technical so that we can be consistent with the rest of the United States. You mentioned Senate Bill 622, and I think it was Senate Bill 38, and I served on the state steering committee for Senate Bill 622 in 1999 when I was at the Department of Ed, and so that took a pretty big part of my life that year, and I've always been very interested in the telecommunications bill and helped start a telecommunications program at Saban where we were sending health services programs and law enforcement programs to other school districts around the state at no cost. And so one of the motivations in writing this bill was to pick up the missing pieces in Senate Bill 622 that weren't provided. Senator Schrader mentioned connectivity, lack of funds for connectivity. The ESDs have sort of worked that problem out through designing a regional hub, so it has lowered the cost from what it was originally going to be. But one of the questions I ask is, why aren't there health services programs offered to every high school student in the state that wants to take health services? Why are only a limited number of high schools offering health services programs? And with the technology and with the video conferencing equipment gathering dust at their home high school, why isn't that equipment used? Why doesn't someone figure out on a statewide basis how to deliver high-quality health services program to those students around the state that are interested? And someone needs to give me a good answer, because so far that's not happening. And it's not only in health services, but other current technical ed fields also, where students are interested in information technology, perhaps computer-aided drafting. All of those programs could be delivered through distance education, maybe from a community college, maybe from another high school, maybe from a university, but it should be delivered at no cost. And I believe that the committee could figure out how to do that. The problem in 622, there was no money for connectivity, and there was no money for curriculum development or delivery of programs to pay for staffing. And so it basically provided infrastructure dollars and equipment dollars for video conferencing at the high school, and that was it. And someone in the legislature, I forget who it was, a senator or representative, told me it was an oversight in Senate Bill 622 that those things weren't built in to into the bill. So with that, I'd just like to say, maybe in closing, it is time to acknowledge that the status of our current CTE programs need a careful and thorough statewide review. We cannot continue to expect that school administrators and school boards will solve these problems at the local level. Oregon's future economic workforce development is at stake. I ask for your support to appoint a Workforce 2005 task force to study our CTE system, explore other funding options, and report and recommend solutions to the 2007 legislature. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dexter. Senator Morissette.
Ron.
Yes. Senator Morissette.
I think I served on that 99 task force, and I visited the school twice, and there's nothing like it in the state. The Saban School Center is the epitome of what we should be doing all over the state.
Thank you.
It's far advanced than a regular vocational school. It's amazing.
And I appreciate that, and I would say, why don't other students across Oregon have the same kinds of opportunities? That model works in a highly densely populated area, so that model is not going to work in Fossil. But there isn't any reason why we can't figure out how students in Fossil can't get the same quality of program through other means. That's the main reason for the task force, is to figure things like that out, so access is equal and access is available to students throughout the state. And I believe that can be done.
All right. Well, we hope to believe you too.
Thank you,
Thank
Mr.
you.
Dexter. Really appreciate your testimony. I'm going to hear from three students from Benson High School, Mary Beard, Jessica Hearn, and Remy... Okay. Remy, when you come up, will you introduce yourself so I don't disgrace your name? I know it's a beautiful name, and I just can't let it roll off my tongue, but I bet you can. All right, if you want to just start out and introduce yourself and state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge I'm not a student.
I was wondering about that.
I did bring two students with me. I am a teacher at Benson High School. I've been there for 7 years.
And you?
My name is Mary Beard.
Oh, well, okay. Thank you.
And I'd like to introduce to my left Jessica Hearn. She's a senior in my dental senior class. And Remy Sibomahin.
See, that is a beautiful name.
It is a beautiful name. He's a junior and Ashley is our junior class president. These are both health service students. So I'm going to do the Reader's Digest version like Mr. Dexter did and let my students speak for most of their experience. As a parent, a grandparent, and also a teacher, a professional technical teacher, I'm very concerned with the direction that professional technical education is heading as far as funding is concerned. In looking at what President Bush is proposing as far as Carl Perkins funds and those funds disappearing, high schools and community college rely on that money to keep these programs going. And then with the state budget, the cuts with budgets to the educational budget for our state, it's going to severely impact professional technical education as we know it today. I've had the good fortune for the last 7 years to work with Benson High School students. I am proud of their professionalism. We're all really nervous today, and I'm really proud of them being able to be here and get up in front of you and the people behind us and be able to make this statement. So this just shows the professionalism that they have, the motivation they have, and the interest they have in their education, not only for themselves, but for kids that are going to, you know, be educated behind them. CTE programs are really very different than traditional high school programs. These kids are exposed to settings that kids in traditional high schools are not. They do anywhere between 100 and 200 hours, clinical hours, in the health services program in a variety of different healthcare settings. They are better equipped to make not only career decisions, but also college decisions by the experiences they have with sharing with dental and dental offices, medical offices, OHSU, Providence, Emmanuel Hospital. Those are all partnerships that we have with agencies or private practices up in Portland. The state is requiring that we look at rigor, relevance, and irrelevance and relationships, and I think that the CTE programs focus on those. Our program at Benson is a four-year program, so they start in their freshman year. By their senior year, they are choosing a major. They are either in a CNA program for a year, a dental assisting program for a year, or a medical profession program for a semester, and the other half is EMT, public health. So I think they are very well equipped to make career decisions. One other thing that I might state is I think Senator Schrader was talking about GPAs. I was trying to recollect the dropout rate of Benson, and it is right at about 2%. And the testimony that you're going to hear from these students today is they choose to come to a school that has a professional technical program because they're interested and see the relevance in that piece of their education along with academics. So in closing, I'd just like to say I'd really like you to look at this bill to understand that pulling together workforce from all different areas that have a vested interest in our youth, and the workforce and future of America is our youth. So I thank you for listening to me today, and I'm going to let Jessica speak now.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Hearn, and I am a senior at Benson Polytechnic High School. It started my freshman year. Actually started way back in middle school. I knew I was interested in the medical field, and I heard of the awesome programs, the health programs that Benson offered. And I was completely spellbound and amazed that they offered such programs to high school students. And when I applied to Benson, I wanted to go into the health occupations program, and I was accepted. And once in the health occupations program, I went through medical terminology for a year. And then my sophomore year, I went through anatomy physiology. And then my junior year, I did a rotation of all four majors that were possible. In each of those four experiences, it was wonderful. Each experience was just amazing. But this year, I chose dental assisting. I have two older brothers, and they both attended Benson. And the oldest also graduated with a dental assisting endorsement. And the middle child graduated with architecture as his major. Presently, I'm completing my clinical time at Laurelwood Dental under the guidance of Dr. Lauren Rice and Dr. Reed Hall. I act as a dental assistant as well as a sterilization technician. One of the employees moved to another office, and it was my responsibility to train and coach the new employee that filled that position. And that was an awesome feeling for me. I'm 17, and I was teaching an employee what to do and what not to do, restrictions, limitations, how to do a job. And the Laurelwood faculty has informed me they are discussing hiring me after I graduate. And as I work my way through college, they said I can work part-time. They'll work with me complete with my schedule. They like me that much, I guess. So it was very touching. Without my training from Benson, I would never have had the opportunity to participate in a clinical setting and be considered for such a position at such a young age. Benson has helped to prepare me for my future in college, medical school, and life in general. I have learned basic medical terminology, as I said before, and the anatomy physiology of the human body, as well as a fetal pig I dissected in anatomy physiology.
We have a bill about dissection later in the session here, so you might want to show up for that one.
Very interesting.
It's allowing students to opt out of dissection.
I'm full for it. Totally for it.
All right, good.
I have been trained under HIPAA's laws and regulations, and I understand completely the importance of confidentiality. Without Benson's programs, I would still be at square one as to figuring out my career and what I wanted to do with my life. In July of 2004, this last summer, Dr. Stanley Cohan, with a PhD, asked me to come work in his office. And he is a renowned neurologist who works at Providence St. Vincent's. And I have been there since I was asked, and I love it completely. And I have assisted his nurse in several studies concerning multiple sclerosis, and I helped him manage his office, and I love it completely. In 10 or so years from now, I see myself in a trauma center as an ER physician, and upon completion of high school, I hope to obtain my dental radiographic certification, my X-ray license, and continue working as a dental assistant through college. Once I've graduated from a four-year university with a psychology degree, I hope to continue on to medical school and fulfill my dream of becoming an emergency room physician. Someday, I hope I will be able to help the youth of America to fulfill their dreams as Benson's career and technical programs have helped me to accomplish mine. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. I can tell you that if I land in an emergency room in 10 years, I hope you're there to help me through my crisis. I've been in a few. I've had children that have taken me there many times. All right, Remy, let's hear from you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Remy Shabomahin, and I'm a junior at Benson High School, and I'm here to support the Senate Bill 364. The reason I came to Benson because I, as well as the other 1,500 students at Benson, am a student who likes to see the process that I make academically, not just reading out of a book and being taught by lectures. I like to actually do things and see the progress that I'm making. And being in a professional technical program here has allowed me to do this. For example, last year we got to, I don't know if she would like this, but dissect a field pig. And that's an experience that college students receive, that's known among college campus, not really a high school class. And our instructor led us through a thorough examination of the body, and by the end of the lab, I had a complete understanding of not only a pig's anatomy, but also a human's. These are the type of hands-on experiences that makes the Benson experience so special. And another reason it's our program is so good is that we have teachers that not just went to school to become a teacher, they have actually been in the field that we're striving to be in. They've been the dental assistants and the nurses and know what it takes to get there. And so they're helping us on our way to getting there as well. But I'd have to say the biggest advantage of a professional technical student over someone who isn't is the field experience that she gets. She mentioned that we get over 200 hours in field experience. So, and we as juniors in high school are getting field experience that students in college, studying to be nurses are getting right now. And this year I was actually set up at a physiatry clinic at Kaiser with a sports doctor, and I was basically a nurse assistant, and I dealt with patients and patients' information and took vital signs. And so I have to say, without this experience, I wouldn't... Well, actually, I'm pursuing a career in sports medicine. And so getting to see what being a sports doctor entails really affirmed my goals and aspirations and really made me really, strive and work harder to becoming what he is. And so without this experience, I wouldn't have known anything like that. I would have been, like she said, stuck at square one. And that's what makes Benson experience so special. They present career options at an early age, in your first and second year, and then later on give you a chance to explore those career options on a more in-depth level, a more professional level, instead of merely teaching out of a book and lecturing. And this gives the students who participate in the professional technical school an advantage over other students as far as getting into college and getting a job. And I've also seen this work among my two brothers. They both went to Benson High School. One was in the VICA program and the other in the Health Op program. And they went on to prestigious colleges, Stanford University and Santa Clara. The one who went to Stanford, at first he wanted to become a doctor. But going through this process, he realized that that wasn't the thing for him and changed before going to college. Without this experience, he would have... I wouldn't say wasted, but spent 2 years in college, maybe three, deciding what he wanted to become. He eventually graduated from Stanford with a degree in urban studies and is now running his own business. And the skills I've learned are priceless, and I would want no other than have other students. I'm graduating in 2 years, so but why I'm here is because I want other students to gain the experience that I've gained. And so that's why the elimination of these funds would be so detrimental to our school, and we need to find, we as education advocates need to find alternative ways to fund our education, and that is what Senate Bill 364 is proposing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Shabomahin.
Mm-hmm.
Did I do that good?
Yeah.
All right. Any questions? Senator Cruz.
Just comment. I didn't get to dissect the pig until college. So you guys are ahead of me.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. We really, truly appreciate it. And I think we're all very impressed with how professional you are and how mature and how excited you are about the program. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, and I'm supposed to ask you if you had written testimony that you wanted to leave. You can leave that with Ms. Tuso over there, and we'll make sure we can read that at our leisure. Great, thank you. Joe Weekly, are you a student or a grown-up? You're all three together, Joe, Glenn, and Kyle? Okay, great. Why don't you three come up? And then I'm going to hear, after I hear from you, we're going to hear from the two students and instructor from Saban. So if you want to announce who you are and where you go to school, and if you have written testimony, we'll take that also. And remember that we can read your written testimony. We really like it when you speak from the heart.
I just kind of need it for my notes.
And you need it for your notes, and I appreciate that. That way we'll have an opportunity to hear from everyone who's come and testified today. So we'll go from left to right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Glenn Nash, and I teach automotive technologies at Estacada, and I'm pleased to be here today, and thank you for letting us testify. I support Measure 364. I think that it is the right time, and I think that what programs need at this point in time is encouragement. I've been teaching at Estacada for, this will be my fourth year, 3 years complete. I can appreciate the service that you provided. I took the time to check your websites, so I would know a little bit more about you. Half of my testimony, written testimony, is actually probably biography, so that you would get to know a little bit more about me. I'm all about serving youth, and I can see that you have the heart of service, too. I know that some of you have been self-employed, as I have. Many of you have taught for many years, and some of you have taught vocation, and I just want to thank you and relate to that. I've been told that after I get my credentials, I entered the profession with a professional technical license because I was a business owner. What I'm trying to teach is business management, everything that is industry related to these students of mine. We do have what I believe can be a model program, but the vocational programs at Estacada are going on the wayside, you know, like in a lot of schools. I have two sons that are 2 years apart. One graduated in 2000 and one in 2002, so they are in the workplace now. And the opportunity for vocation has been diminishing. In the past 5 years, Estacada has had four principals. In the last 2 years, we've lost four vocations. And I, not to boast myself, but to boast the program, at the right time, funds from CTEC, which is the Clackamas Professional Technical Education Consortium, were made available in a grant form to bring me in and revitalize the program because they were struggling. We still have metal shop, wood shop, drafting, and automotive, but we've lost home ec, agriculture, photography, graphic arts, a lot of programs that mean a lot to students who will not go to college and will go directly into the workforce. I plan to be there. Unlike the principals that come and go, it's my town. I grew up there. I graduated. And I want to do what I can to make things work for this kid. I do see us getting certified, ASE certified, in the near future. And I do believe that we can be a model program. We have excellent support from business and industry. We have excellent support from the school board, parents. We have the community that donates a lot of cars to us. And it's not about money for me. It's not about funding, because that has continued to work out. What is most important to me is time. And time is probably the biggest investment that we can make for the students, I feel, in my heart. So I'm there when they need to be. These two guys have come in and worked on their own car. They're fanatics. They do their own work, and that's part of being a business-like, is to be able to access information on your own, do your own work, deal with businesses, deal with the public. But from my doors, when they get out, if they're going to go into the workplace, it's not like it was 25, 30 years ago when I graduated. I went to work at a car lot and just got brought in to the industry. We need trained technicians in the industry today, and I want to be a stepping stone for them, but they will need to have the support they need, and I think the task force brings in the right people that can help guide programs like ours. And vocation is a very important thing that needs to be supported, and it's not really about the money for us. It's about the encouragement and the hope is that this program will be here. So I'm really pleased to introduce Joe Weekly and Kyle Fenning.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Nation.
Thank you. Chair Walker, members of the committee, I'm here to support Bill 364, and it's pretty much what Glenn was saying. We really need the programs to better ourselves for college. Like, we just now get like 3 credits. If we take the advanced auto shop, we automatically start out with 3 credits in Clackamas Community College. And I think that really motivates us to go to college after high school and really helps us to get motivated and stuff. But like our vocational classes have been cut in the last 3 years, like we were saying. And I think it would really help if we brought those back and stuff like that. Thanks. You're up, pal.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone, chair and committee. I'm in support of the Bill 364, and my name is Kyle Fenning. And I'm a senior at Estacada High School. I do automotive with Glenn Nation, and he's a great teacher. Time is most important to him. I've been after school, 6 o'clock, at night with him, learning automotive stuff. And I'm also part of the VICA program in welding and automotive. I have credits at Clackamas Community College in automotive and welding. And my car I work on is a judge comes around from the Portland Roadster Show and picks top cars from all the high schools around Oregon, so I'm competing in that in 2 weeks. And the reason I'm in favor of supporting this is our school needs better programming, and we have 35 plus students in one classroom, and we're stuck doing book work because we can't learn hands-on material because we can't get 35 guys to stand around a brake lathe or something. And so help is needed in that. And in college, we don't have any trade schools such as UTI, where we have to go halfway across the nation to go to a trade school to learn better automotive. Clackamas Community College, I'm sure, is a good school, but it's not like UTI, and that would definitely help out so we can get the proper training right here in Oregon. And also, that would keep jobs here that way. When you go down there, you might stay down there or something. Or, my parents, we have a Daewoo, it's a car, and I don't know if you've heard of it or not, but we have to go all the way to Washington to have it been worked on because no one's trained to work on Daewoos here in Oregon.
Oh.
And thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Are you learning how to work on Daewoos in your class?
No. Maybe I should bring it in, Glenn.
Make an appointment.
Okay.
I think your parents would probably appreciate it. Well, again, I want to thank you all for coming and testifying. Do either of you, Mr. Fenning or Mr. Weekly, are you planning on going to Clackamas Community College where you have those?
Yeah, we both are.
Great. Well, thank you. Again, professional, just very excited about the program. We love to hear that. And I know all of us here appreciate it.
Madam Chair, if I could add, we were under the impression that we had a 2+2 articulation with Clackamas Community College,
mm-hmm.
because it had been posted year after year in the course curriculum that the students selected their classes from. It come to find out that we did not have that agreement in place since 1999, which was about the time the previous instructor was letting things go to the wayside. It does take a big commitment by instructors to stay with this, and it does take guidance from people like Ron Dexter, who has guided me through this process. I'm not a school teacher. I don't consider myself one. I still consider myself a businessman, but I coached for a long time, so I love teaching kids to get better. and to just make the best of themselves. So we do have that articulation agreement back in place, and that's just part of the process.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Nation, I do hope that we all are teachers in our lives in some way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to hear next from a group from Saban Skill Center. We have Deborah Barnes, an instructor, Kelsey Buck, a student, and I think the principal of that school. Well, we have four people from Saban. So, yeah, you can grab one of these chairs, and we'll get all four of you. Ron Mumphries is the principal, and then I think we have John Walker. I love that last name, who's also an instructor. So just come on up and take turns introducing yourself. And does that one not scoot? We've got a loose one over here. Thank you very much. And those microphones will scoot around. And if you have written testimony, make sure you get that to Ms. Tuso. Okay, who wants to lead off?
Where's our student?
Okay. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Kelsey Buck. I am a student in the Media Communications Program at the Saban Schellenberg Center, and I am here in support of Senate Bill 364. Sorry. I'm here today to speak to you about opportunity. I've been given the opportunity to speak to you today. I've been granted the opportunity to get a good traditional education. And now I'm offered the opportunity to take a vocational class. The latter is most important to me. This is because it's the opportunity to test the waters in a career that I'm seriously considering. This opportunity comes to me in the form of a class called Media Communications, which I take at the Saban Schellenberg Center in Milwaukee. Saban Schellenberg, or SCC, is a vocational and technical center that offers career-based classes to high school students. Some of the 20 programs offered at SCC are early childhood development, law enforcement, marketing and management, which includes DECA, the Student Leadership Business Organization. All of these programs are college-level classes. That gives you an idea of kind of the kind of programs we have. In my media communications class, we work hands-on with cameras and lighting and audio board that is used by everyday professionals. We recently took a national test to become certified in television production. This test is normally given to college sophomores, but since we receive 12 to 15 college credits in this program, it seemed appropriate. I passed this test with one of the highest national scores. Mm-hmm. This class has helped me so much in order to achieve my goal. Communications has been my dream. My dream job, obviously, would be to be a newscaster. The test covered pre-production, production, and post-production. Pre-production is storyboarding. Post-production is lighting and the actual operation of the cameras. And post-production is editing and things like that. I have been trained in all of these areas, and I feel that I am proficient. The test obviously proves that. The training I receive in this class goes above the technical aspects. I've learned important leadership skills, and these skills will benefit me no matter what career I choose. I've never been offered this kind of opportunity in any other classes. Most of my classes are textbook classes. I sit, I copy, I repeat, I learn. In this class, I am allowed to experiment and be creative. We've worked on making films, music videos. We produced a documentary about meth use. All of these are student-produced. We are responsible for every single aspect of production. In the North Clackamas School District, we are responsible for a senior project before graduation. For my senior project, I produced 2 hours of live election night coverage on the school district and the Clackamas Communities Channel. This gave me an awesome opportunity. I used all of the school skills that I have learned here. I was allowed to be producer, which means that I have control. I am in charge from everything from script to set design. I would have never been able to do that or even dream of doing that if I had not been offered this opportunity through my media communications class. I've also this opportunity, by doing that, allowed me to find myself as a leader and as a team worker. I also learned a lot about problem solving and even more about communications, verbal and technical. This program has given me an opportunity to experience a professional environment with deadlines and expectations much like those in a workplace. Because of the rules, I feel that I will be much more prepared for college communications classes. I also feel that I will be much more prepared for these classes than someone who has not been offered these opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Buck. Very good testimony. Any questions?
Madam Chair, I just point out that I think CBS Evening News is looking for a new anchor.
I think you're right, Senator. I think you're right. And it would be nice to replace a male anchor with a female one. All right, thank you. Who would like to go next?
My name is Deborah Barnes, and up until 11 years ago, I was a professional broadcaster in the state of Oregon. I was a reporter in Salem, Portland, and in Klamath Falls, and Ron Dexter actually hired me to run what was then the telecommunications program, which is now the media communications class at the Sabin Schellenberg Center. The purpose of secondary professional technical education is to prepare students for both work and further education by increasing the academic achievement of students enrolled in vocational courses, to ensure that students are technically literate, and to ensure they can continue to learn in a career and in post-secondary education. State lawmakers in Oregon and across the nation are now asking, what does accountability look like for secondary professional technical education? Well, Senate Bill 364 proposes a Workforce 2005 task force. COSA has already endorsed this proposal. Last week, the North Clackamas Education Association went on record unanimously supporting this bill. Thursday, February 17th, the school board of the North Clackamas School District voted unanimously to endorse this measure and to urge the OSBA to support the legislation. And late this morning, Joe Johnson, president of Clackamas Community College, told me after I talked to him on the phone about the bill that he is supporting the bill and is asking his association to back it as well. So why should they all support the bill, and why do we ask you to support it? Federal funding for professional technical education funding has been eliminated in the president's budget. State coordination of PTE leadership organizations has been eliminated in the governor's budget. This task force could study the options for funding by gaining support of foundations and business and industry. This bill provides accountability by reviewing and reporting results and recommendations for our 2+2 programs. We have one with Mount Hood Community College. The Quality Education Commission report on the cost of quality K-12 education in Oregon did not include a study on the cost or value of high school professional technical programs. I believe that quality CTE programs raise academic achievement, and every day we hear people like Lars Larson, who was a peer of mine, say there is not enough educational accountability. He and others complain the public is being sold a bill of goods about the impact of education on our students. This is a clear way to prove to him and others who say the same thing over and over again that we believe that education is important, it leads to success of our students, and we're willing to prove it. We're asking the state to look into our achievements and ways to improve. We're asking the state to take a look at professional, technical education, and student leadership organizations and the impacts they have on student achievement. The charge of the task force will be to review and report the actual cost of providing quality professional technical education in Oregon. Now's the time to step forward, support a plan that sets out the task force on how we can help others, just like those kids at the Sabin Schellenberg Center. 3,000 of them attend our schools. Schools like the center provide more than an education. They lead to economic development and students continuing their education. And I'm urging your support of Senate Bill 364.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Walker, and I'm a teacher in the North Clackamas School District at the Sabin Schoenberg Center. I teach information technology. There are a number of bills and committees at present which directly or indirectly attempt to address an issue within the career and technical education field. There are many institutions working on various components of what could be a comprehensive CTE strategy throughout the state of Oregon. While each may be a worthy effort on their own merit or intention, without a clear framework or a clear outline of the strengths and challenges for CTE, the overall impact is diluted. My own expertise is in information technology. My focus program of study would be better served by a comprehensive look at all of the programs and strategies. In the educational environment of today, time and effort is being spent integrating technology into the classroom. The actual education of students to create the technology workforce that Oregon needs to maintain growth and leadership in this field isn't as focused. The actual curriculum development and technology programs remains less clearly focused in these post-internet boom years than it was more than a decade ago. Some of the simple confusions have arisen when technology classes have moved down to lower and lower levels. Technology is now being taught in 6th and 7th grade that used to be taught at much higher levels. Such a task force as this would help us build integrated programs, collectively administering our resources to the maximum benefit across the entire CTE range of grades, which would then increase the opportunities and the number of students in these programs, one that's important to Oregon's future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Mr. Moncrief.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm very pleased to be in such a good group. This is a good job, working with dedicated teachers from industry. And I don't know whether you're catching the drift, but I hope you are, that these kids have focus. And that's what I think is the main thing, main course here. I think, as Senator Schrader mentioned, some of the national data indicates that these kids that have focus do far better in school. They continue, you heard from the Benson students, that they continue their education right on into the university level.
And Mr. Moncrief, I need to interrupt you so that you introduce yourself and
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm the principal of Sabin Schoenberg.
There you go. You're the star. Thank you.
And at North Clackamas School District.
Thank you.
Your name?
Ron Munkers.
Thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, hopefully, I'm on board. Okay, good. I think one of the other issues, I have a testimony, and we'll give you that. I'll give you the abridged version of that as well. Because I've heard testimony today, you can read my testimony, and basically they were dealing with the questions I think we need to ask of career and technical education for its accountability. But I did hear earlier from Department of Education that accountability is job one, I think, was the quote that I heard, and that if you have quality information that works well, that's important, and that they felt like they couldn't provide that for us or for you, and without outside input. And I think that's what we're looking at here is that kind of input. You heard earlier about distance learning. We have one of those distance learning systems at our school in our healthcare, and as you heard, we're also doing it in the law enforcement area. When I came on board 3 years ago, we were serving 12 outside school districts around the state, and those were far reaches of Eastern Oregon and on the Oregon coast. The distance learning equipment is sitting in the health sciences lab area because the schools don't have the money to make that connection. We had a staff member that was doing that, and health science is one of the big ones. We have a lot of interest in that. There's a lot of careers available in that. Just today, just before I came up, we were taking a look at our forecast for next year, and I have enough extra students applying for the two positions I already have in health science. I could be adding a third person. I could be doing the same thing in IT because we have enough enrolled in that. We turned away 250 students last year from our program, and we have 300 students we're going to turn away just in one program this year. So the demand is great. There just doesn't seem to be a systematic approach to how we ought to address it. I've had almost every major community up and down I-5 come to the Sabin Schoenberg Center to see how we're doing it. And as Ron Dexter shared with you, it works in a metropolitan area, but we have to take a look at the other efforts in other areas as well. So I think that we're way beyond due of taking a real hard look at professional technical education. What is high quality? What are the rewards? And that goes into the advanced education, where they're going, and I think that we just need the data, and that's what the legislators are putting the bill together want as well. Show us the data, show us the information. How can we determine whether it's effective or not? And if it is, let's figure out a way to sustain it, because there's not a sustainable model. I came from Washington, where there was a very strong sustainable model, and that was one of the first questions I asked my predecessor, Ron Dexter. I said, how do you keep this thing afloat? He says we do it year by year. And so that's that tin cup you were talking about earlier, Madam mm-hmm. Chair. And I think we have to get away from that. We have to figure out a structure that makes sense. And then the last thing I would mention is that I was talking to one of our labor partners. We put together a very creative program with the labor trades in our area. And they are actually coming in and teaching the apprenticeship training programs at our school. Their frustration is that they have a 10-year lag, that they need those workers when they're in their early 20s, when they have the knowledge and they have the energy, and they're not getting them until they're close to their 30s. So I think those are some of the issues that we want to take a look at. And I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and testify on behalf of Senate Bill 364.
Thank you, Mr. Moncrief. I think Senator Starr has a question, don't you?
No, only a comment. I visited the center when Ron was there several years ago and got to witness the demonstration of the learning program in the nursing school. And impressed me then, and as I view education and what's happening across America, I see distance learning as a way of delivering services that it's here and now, mm-hmm. and very much more effort needs to be put into that, I feel, in order for us to deliver quality education to all students anywhere in the state. And I appreciate testimony today. It's been wonderful, having been a vocational ag teacher and supporting those programs all my life. I know how it builds leadership, character, purpose. All of these programs are wonderful, and we do need to know how we can sustain them in a way that benefits all students, so that they can have that early commitment. That is why so many students leave school, is because they're not committed to a future that they envision for themselves. And so God bless and Godspeed. We're going to do our best here.
Yeah, may I?
Thank you, Senator Morissette.
I visited twice, and I saw a demonstration in a class that an architect was teaching how to draft on a computer, and it was interesting. It was. I was on the task force. I attended many meetings during the interim with Ron and other people around the state, and there were people there from Boeing and Intel, I believe, and I think what you need to do is you need to get give us the information on the connections you have to the business community and to the industrial community, because they are partners, and I think that would be very powerful in helping us to. I support the program totally. I mean, I have always supported it, because it does exactly as all of the kids are saying. It gives people a head start. But I think we need to emphasize the partnership with the private sector, and try to impress upon the legislature. Now, I notice in the bill that funds can be accepted from other places, which is important, and I don't know what we're going to get from the State Department, but I certainly will support it. But emphasize your partnerships with the private sector.
We would hope that this task force would also give the platform for our business partners to come forward, and I think that they really want to be heard, mm-hmm. and I think this gives them a platform for that.
Yeah. Thank you very much, and Ms. Buck, I wish you well in your endeavors. I'll look for you on the TV screen.
We'll see you on TV.
Yeah. All right. Colleagues, we have two more witnesses who have written testimony. I'm going to ask them to just come up and speak briefly. If you have to go, that's fine. We're not going to take more than 2 minutes apiece. So Ms. Zavala with the Oregon University System and Julie Sahonik with the Oregon Community Colleges Association. And thank you once again for staying late. Because we can read your written testimony, and you're standing between me and the end of my day.
I understand that better.
Ooh, that's a dangerous place to be.
Actually, I think I'm supposed to be at a dinner and two receptions, so I'll be brief. Okay, Ms. Zavala, state who you
good
are.
Afternoon. Certainly, this is I'm Lisa Zavala with the Oregon University System, and thank you for this opportunity. Just wanted to let you know the State Board of Higher Education and the University System support Senate Bill 364. Hey. We would like to, I'm just going to skip right down to the very last paragraph and ask if we could have an amendment to the bill so that the Oregon University System is specifically included in the task force. There's been some question as to whether or not the reference to higher education does include, in this case, OUS, and that the language in the bill would also allow the chancellor of the Oregon University System to serve, to be one of those parties that make appointments to the task force. Specifically, President Martha Ann Dow from Oregon Institute of Technology is very interested in this task force and would like to have a place at the table. I talked with Dr. Dexter, and he's supportive of that, and in fact indicated to me that that was his intention all along.
Did you discuss that with the sponsors of the bill?
I have not, okay. Senator Walker, but I would be happy to check with them tomorrow and make sure there are no concerns there. Mm-hmm. I did let Marjorie know earlier this afternoon that that was our intent.
That's probably not going to be a problem, and I wasn't going to move these bills today anyway.
Okay.
I have the intention of doing that, but okay. Not today, and so that'll give you a chance to have that conversation.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Ms. Sahonik.
Hi, for the record, my name is Julie Sahonik. I'm with the Oregon Community College Association, and we just wanted to get on the record that we welcome this opportunity to, again, work with our K-12 and university partners to advance vocational education. We have played a valuable role in partnership with our K-12, recognizing that those institutions had to cut these programs, and we think that the professional technical degree is necessary in providing the skilled workforce that Oregon is going to need in the future.
Well, thank you. That was well said, and I appreciate you being brief. And as I said, we do have your written testimony, and I just want to thank everyone who came and testified today. I really love hearing from young people. It makes it worth being here. Colleagues, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 364, and I will see you next Monday. We have a hearing on our sex abuse legislation, and the Salem Kaiser School District will be in, hopefully. So we will have a very long day that day, but we'll try to end it on time. Thank you. We're adjourned.